Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, we go over a very moving documentary I saw last night. I think you guys will find it fascinating. We'll also talk to an American vigilante who, well, I'd give you his name, but he doesn't travel under a name. We call him Casey. Very interesting story about going into Mexico, real dark stuff, little vengeance killing. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know. It's hard work out there, owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
This is Walk-In's Welcome with Bridget Fettesy.
I love hearing people's stories of resilience and grit. This is why I created this podcast.
We are very excited to welcome Jim Gaffigan,
Yasmin Mohammed,
Glenn Beck, Tim Dillon,
Abigail Schreier,
Jeff Garland,
Ayan Hirsi Ali,
Sam Harris,
Heather Hying,
Jonah Goldberg,
Ben Shapiro,
Glenn Greenwald,
Sarah Shahi,
Colin Quinn.
If there's a culture of victimhood, then let's tell stories of grit and survival.
Subscribe and listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Dave Damashek, and from American Vigilante, KC. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, that guy from that show with the car friend, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the truth again on Mandy. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
We are looking at a thirst trap.
That's right. All right, lots planned for today's show. I was watching a documentary on HBO Max, which was called Adrian. I don't know if you guys saw that one yet.
Doesn't sound familiar.
I think you would both enjoy it. It's that very heartbreaking story about the actress Adrian Shelley. Adrian Shelley wrote, directed, and co-starred in Waitress,
yes,
the movie.
That's right. Okay.
We might have some recollection about her being murdered right before the movie came out, or about the time, I think it was before it showed up at Sundance.
Oh, was she the one in her New York apartment?
Yeah.
I know it because of you.
Which is confusing because you have to watch the doc, but she was just really beautiful, kind of quirky, had kind of like a Roseanne Arquette kind of vibe, you know, kind of beautiful, but not in a totally traditional,
right,
Kim Basinger kind of way, but
super cute,
cute, spunky actress who started off, you know, doing plays and went to, I think Boston College, and then at some point like dropped out, moved to New York to become an actress, and then gotten a few indie films, like early 90s indie films, and did a movie with like Paul Rudd and guys like that when they were sort of coming up, became a kind of a darling of the sort of indie film,
yep,
genre with the beautiful, quirky, you know, leading lady. Went to Hollywood, got a little disenchanted with things, always wanted to do her own things, mm-hmm, started her own theater company, started making her own films, probably not that well received at the beginning, then ended up with Waitress, which was a pretty big film,
yeah,
lower budget, but made the rounds, was much celebrated. I looked it up. I think Rotten Tomatoes has it at 89 with the critics, and
it's very pleasant.
74.
It's a lovely movie.
Yeah. It's a little,
cute,
the characters are kind of the characters, like the bad husband. It's just, where are you? You know, like
two-dimensional.
I did love the Andy Griffith character.
A little two-dimensional. like one of these guys should pull up to pick her up and be honking the horn, yeah, as he's pulling up the driveway. Like, what's taking so long? It's like, well, you were in the driveway 60 feet from where I work, but all right, a little two-dimensional sometimes, but but a perfectly pleasant, nice little slice of pie life, sort of about pie. Said some unique stuff. I believe she was murdered before the film came out. The reason she was murdered in her apartment, which sounds a little confusing, is she was married. She had a two-year-old girl who she was the light of her life. And the husband, the apartment was really her office in Manhattan, but it was an apartment, but she used it as an office, and they lived in another apartment. So when they kept going murdered in her apartment, that kind of meant her office, mm-hmm. which was an apartment. So the loving husband who made the doc drops her off. And I don't know, I think it's a Friday, but it drops her off toward the end of the week. She goes up and she's going to work in her office apartment. And, you know, they're young family. She's 40. They're making all the plans of, you know, going out and on the weekends. And she's in love with their little daughter. And then the husband, who's pretty solid guy, you know, checking in with her during the day, and she's not getting back to him and sending emails and where are you? It's kind of like, well, she's probably busy with work, but this isn't like her not to get back with me. He's at his office doing his work, nothing to do with show business. And at some point at the end of the day, he goes, you know, she hasn't returned any calls. She hasn't returned any emails or texts. I'm worried. I'm going to go over to check up on her. His friend drives him over there, sort of wait in the car, let me just make sure she's okay. Goes up to the office, finds her hanging in the bathroom. So that's the story. Then the newspapers get hold of it, and young starlet, you know, kills herself. Right. Story never really works for him because she wasn't suicidal. Yeah. She was so in love with her young daughter. Why would she do this? Didn't make sense, but that's the story that everyone ran with. And he's kind of pushing on the cops, you know, you need to really investigate this. They're kind of like, man, it looks like a suicide to us. Eventually,
that's one way to die that no one will question.
Yes, eventually he gets a little
that's one way to die.
He gets a little traction, and it turns out that she was murdered, and she was just murdered kind of randomly by some, I think he was a teenager, could have been 19.
And he strung her up to make it look like a suicide?
Yep. He was, Jesus, he was just fucking Christ. Like working in the unit below her. Like he was a construction worker guy, just doing 19. Some renovation.
Can't trust those construction guys.
You cannot.
We've been saying it forever.
And the first story was she was telling him to be quiet, and that's why he killed her, but the second story is I think he went up there to, like, rob her. She resisted. Mm. He killed her. Then he panicked, made her look like a suicide. And had they not gotten the footprint that was on the construction site or construction unit below hers and the same one that matched with the one in the bathroom or the tub or whatever, they would have never gotten it. But then this guy cops out. He basically takes, I think, a 25
years in prison without parole
sentence.
Dawson really knows this case.
I know. And
so what did the guy really get?
And I think that was it. I think he agreed to 25 without parole, without anything. But you got to keep in mind, this happened 15 years ago.
Oh,
now.
Interesting.
So now he's the daughter is, you know, not two anymore. The daughter's 18 or 17 or whatever. And the husband's still going strong. The husband has to raise the daughter now without mommy, and it's all very tragic. And at some point, he corresponds with the guy, and the guy's like repentant and sorry and wants to meet with him. And it's all very tragic. Now, he's going to get out, and, you know, as the husband was saying, he's going to be, you know, just a little bit older than his wife, Adrian, was when the guy killed him. He's got his whole, you know, she had her whole life ahead of her, then he's got his whole life ahead of him. Very, very compelling. I think it's called Adrian, and it's on HBO Max. Damn. And, you know, it's all chronicled because she was in movies. So there's a lot of home movies, a lot of filming, and a lot of footage, you know, of her scenes from movies and everything.
And you see her, you go, oh, yeah, her.
Oh, yeah, her. Yeah, that's what you'll think. I don't know. Is there anything I'm missing there, Max Zapata?
That's Dawson.
No.
He's the
expert. Or Dawson.
When he does get released in prison, it says here that since he's an illegal immigrant from Ecuador, he is scheduled to be deported upon his release.
It's also kind of one of those things that the news doesn't really like because he's here illegally, and they're kind of like, oh, it's a Fox Newsy thing. It's not a mainstream thing because the theme of the legal killing the blonde girls, it's not. They don't like the optics of it. Yeah. So for a pretty big... You know, you think about a case. It's New York. It's modern time. She's coming off a big movie. Mm-hmm. She's murdered. It was a suicide. It's got all the makings mm-hmm. of a case that we should all be pretty familiar with.
Yeah.
But we're not because he's illegal and they don't like that optic. So it just didn't make the rounds like it could have.
And yeah, so she died in 2006. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, this is the first I'm hearing of it.
Well, I knew she was murdered, but I assumed it was the husband or something or some inside job.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little peek behind the curtain of the news, which is like, what themes are we running with? And this one's got some good makings to it. We got the blonde. She's beautiful. She's dead. She's a star. This Manhattan. This is all good. And then it's got the guy's here illegally from Ecuador. Like, keep walking on
Dateline
this one.
Dateline should have been all over this.
Yes, it definitely had the trappings of some good stuff. And yes, if the husband did it, then we would definitely all know about this case. But now you know, because I investigated.
Thank God.
By watching the doc.
You investigated.
It's a good doc.
Watched a movie.
And yes, that's right. Sometimes,
did?
Hey, look. Every single one of those stupid cop shows are like, the case went cold and 3 years passed, and then one day the phone rang.
That's right.
All right, he just picked up the phone, but he still blew the lid off this bad boy.
I broke this case, my collar.
I would argue it's more difficult to watch a 96-minute doc than it is to pick up the phone at the office.
Yeah,
can't dispute that.
That's right. I'm a hero.
Remember how into the Heights I was and how much I, you know, mm-hmm. couldn't stop singing its praises and hated anyone who shat on it?
This is the play or the movie?
The movie.
Okay.
And, you know, Hamilton was on. It was great. Have you guys heard about Tick, Tick, Boom? The latest.
I've heard of it, but please educate me.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. So it's a Broadway play, but they adapted it for a movie.
Gina, Waitress became a big Broadway play with Sarah Bareilles.
Bareilles did all the music.
All Circles.
Bareilles.
Leading back to her and that.
You're right. You're right. Thank you. So this is about Jonathan Larson. It's kind of a story within a story within a story. Jonathan Larson wrote Rent. Mm-hmm. And he never saw Rent. He died. It just reminded me when you said that about her. I think the day of previews, he never saw the play.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know. Straight guy, didn't die of AIDS. Somehow that everyone thinks he did. But he had like some aortic aneurysm or something. And Andrew Garfield, who I'm generally not a huge fan of, he plays Jonathan Larson in the movie. And he is fucking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're into something that's just a little more cerebral, not a straightforward musical like Into the Heights, this is the story of Jonathan Larson before he created Rent and when he was still kind of a knockaround guy. And it's really well done. But like, you really got to pay attention because it's weird.
It's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I also got from watching this documentary. Investigating this doc was... A simpler time when there are lots of them as a young couple and, they went to Paris and he proposed in Paris and they would show pictures of them in front of the Eiffel Tower on a bridge or something. And it was clear that they handed someone the camera and went, hey, could you get a shot of us? Which always makes for a better shot because the two versus the selfie.
With the arm.
One person's arm's going out of the thing and everyone's face is all fishbowl. You know, it was a simpler time.
Yeah.
And I would say... Even though we're in the age of the selfie, is a friendly tourist. They all have an iPhone. Hand them your phone.
Hand it on over.
Tell them to step back a few feet and take a shot of you. Put your arm around your honey bunny.
I love going up to people and saying, do you want me to take that for you guys? Because it's such an easy thing to do and they get so excited. Like,
we're eating dinner, bitch.
They shoo me away,
we'll
call the manager.
Give it to you when we're done. Yeah, speaking of food, a rare writing assignment was given out here today. And we'll get to it when Sheck comes in, because he's probably going to have thoughts on it as well. But I will set the table, pardon the pun, that when I watch football with the boys at the shop, they're all, well, comedians, comedic writers, a lot of talent in the room, comedically. And when they would go, when you were watching Fox and there'd be a controversial call and they would throw it to New York, the head ref who was in New York, who would do all the replay calls, so they would kind of throw it to New York and go, what do you think?
They're
you
expert.
Know? Right.
Right. The guy's name struck me, and we'll play it. We'll play a little clip.
It certainly looks like he did not finish this catch, which would mean it's an incomplete and not an interception. But why ask me? Let's hear the call first, and then we'll go to Dean Blandino.
All right. The pass was incomplete. So the guy's name is Dean Blandino, and then I'm sitting there drinking beers, and I'm like, Blandino sounds like the worst Italian restaurant ever. And then, of course, everyone had to start riffing on it, you know, fine. Pasta sauce a little too aggressive for your palate? Well, at Blandino's, we use 100% ketchup on all our pasta dishes at Blandino's. And it was just how boring and bland and whatever this Italian food, and it would get out into salads and parking and dessert and
parking.
Well, I was
no
like,
red cars.
And as always, beige Camrys park free at Blandino's, you know. And it was always just a commercial for Blandino's.
That's great.
So I said, well, everyone write down a few of the signature dishes that they might serve at the world's blandest Italian joint. And well, Sheck got the memo as well, so we'll get into Blandino's. Now, of course, inevitably, once or twice a game, they got to throw to Dean Blandino, and then I have to go over some menu items as soon as we come back from Blandino's. All right, so we got that.
Can't wait to go through the menu.
Coming up. Well, I'm interested.
Okay.
I wrote down, I got a few offerings here myself. Let's see. We have Sheck coming in. We're going to talk to the founder of the Brotherhood of Vigilance. Now, this sounds very
Vigilantes?
Ominous. Well, it's called the Brotherhood of Vigilance, but maybe.
But I think you could put two and two together.
That's called American Vigilante that he was on. He was being described to me what this guy does, and he does the stuff the cops won't do. Or
they don't want to get their hands dirty?
Or also
you know,
the.
Run afoul of the law or be investigated.
Judicial system won't do. And as I was being described to me, yesterday from Chris, I said, pull up the beginning of the show, The A-Team.
Okay.
Because I see, so the guy we're going to, I'm saying the guy because I don't have his name and his identity is going to be protected, but he's a veteran. And the people he works with are also experienced veterans as well. So they know their way around, you know, a rifle, some tactics. And I thought, this sounds a lot like the beginning of The A-Team. So I said, I don't know, pull it up, Chris. Let's see if it does.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune.
Yeah,
if you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
So it's basically some veterans that got together, and if the courts ain't going to help, you need a job done. You go with the A-Team.
That's right.
Or the L.A. Underground.
I guess
I've lived in L.A. for 57 years.
I'm not aware.
I know there's a sewer system.
Maybe.
I've seen people camping in the L.A. River.
They talk of subways that go from one place
to
another.
That's right. A couple of metro stations, I wouldn't know.
I'm a guy who's so ensconced in L.A., I know the difference between La Cunada and La Crescenta. Ooh. Most people don't even know that there's a difference or but even I have not heard of the LA Underground.
Dude, get this. There's two San Vicentes.
Wow.
So I don't want to. Can we cut that out? Can we bleep that out?
Oh, there's two Santa Monicas,
what?
Too. But we still don't know about the LA Underground.
No, I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know where Rodeo and Rodeo meet, right?
There is?
Oh, my God.
In the
Beverly Drive and a Beverly Boulevard.
In the
you mustn't call Rodeo Rodeo when you get down that far.
To give my old correcting grandma her due, in through Beverly Hills is Cannon Drive. My grandmother always said Canyon.
That's right. Has a little
Canyon.
Well, Tilda. Dipsy doodle over
it's
the
got
top.
Got a little a tortilla or no, a little Tilda. Senor. It's got a little senior over the end.
She's right.
Right? She's right.
Yeah, she is right.
All right. Give her a due. All right. So we got all that to get to as well. I wrote down some other things. Let's see.
You got a lot of notes there, buddy.
I know. Well, they're starting to add up.
You got notes over here.
It's the end of the week. Oh, I got more
notes. They're migrated.
Yeah.
Are these your notes?
It's the mark of a.
There's more notes here.
It's a mark of a genius or an insane person to have a lot of notes.
Yes, it is.
It is definitely. It's definitely both. That's Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew.
There's a lot of doodles.
Is a ferocious doodler.
If these were pinned up on the wall with like string connecting them, I'd be worried.
Right. Although I do pin them up on the wall sometimes.
Oh my God.
Well, I have a cork board. I'm trying to keep my jokes together.
Sonny, do something.
All right. We have Adam, who did get his catalytic converter stolen. We were talking about that yesterday. Adam?
Yeah. Hey.
Hi, guy. Yeah. Hey.
Hey, guy. love the show. I love you guys. I've been listening for years, so thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm.
Did you get your catalytic converter, was it cut out with like a Sawzall, or did they unbolt it?
Yeah, so it was cut out. I was out of town for a weekend, and it was parked, you know, in long-term parking near the airport, and I got back late Sunday night, and I start up the car, and it makes this horrible loud sound, and I didn't know what it was. And yeah, it turns out it was cut out and stolen. It's a thing. I mean, I guess I didn't know. I mean, I was listening to the show yesterday and I didn't realize before this happened to me that it was like such a thing with people and, you know, selling them for the precious metals.
So this was an inside job if you were at like a private parking lot, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It was at a hotel, and the funny thing is, like, I told my parents about it later, and they like immediately blamed me. I was like, okay.
That's what you get for parking your car.
The hotel back, and they were like, zero help. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they were in on it. I don't know.
Did you have to go to the dealer and get a new one? And or did you buy one, which was probably stolen from somebody else? And or how much was it from the dealer?
So, I mean, it was an older car. It was an 03 Subaru. I filed a claim with my insurance, and they, you know, I just filed it as theft. And they were cool. Like, they gave me a decent amount for it. Mm-hmm. And I just ended up selling the car as is. To somebody who likes working on them.
Wow, that did not answer my question at all. But
I'm sorry, Adam. I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. That's what happened. I was just I had an A or a B. Either you bought a used one or you bought a new one. I didn't know the part where you just cut bait. By the way,
move on.
I like that how fast and loose you play with your vehicles. Like I came back, there was a crack in my windshield. Man, I just fucking put it on eBay.
Sold it as is.
Yeah.
Those Subarus, those will last you.
2003 Subaru, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. Speaking of cracks in the windshield, you guys see those Safelite commercials
Safe
all
Light
the time?
Repairs, Safelite replace. Yeah.
Right. They're doing a lot of those.
Yeah.
Evidently, there's a lot of dings and windshields out there.
We just took Christy's car to Safelite to get the thing fixed, literally 3 months ago.
Well, I was really focusing on those commercials. Mm-hmm. The commercials are interesting. There's two aspects of the commercials.
Please tell me, like, where the guy waves off the wallet.
My favorite. There's two. Now, I grew...
It's like a pitcher saying no to a catcher signal.
I grew up, yes. Yeah, there's the end part. There's two things I've learned with those Safe Flight commercials. The woman is in charge. Mm. They always do the POV. They put the camera inside of the car when they discover the crack in the windshield.
Right.
The guy's kind of in the background a little. The woman has to,
like
she's really devastated.
Shot,
the guy's kind of come see, like, let the insurance handle it, or it's not my car, or whatever it is. The guy's always a couple steps back. They're camping or something, and the trip has been destroyed. Been ruined because.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You got to get prepared. Home.
Yeah. And the women always have the, like a big reaction. The guys are kind of back, a little more measured, you know, but it's the women. And then it's also the woman's job to pay. Mm. And at a certain point, the Safelite guy's like, we don't accept cash. Yeah. I don't know what their business model is.
Your money's no good here.
They evidently just repair windshields for free.
Well,
they will not accept cash.
The ad point is like, we'll take insurance and even take your payments.
Right.
I mean, insurance will cover it. Not a dime out of your, pocket.
Right. But if most people
represented by no.
Well, first off, in 2021, it's always funny that the women have a wad of cash. Like they just got back from the track.
Right. I was going to say, they're strippers.
And the other part is yeah, they let insurance cover it, but the deductible is probably $500 and fixing the chip is $275. Sure. I think most people would pay the cash with the deductible. But yes, so I grew up watching the opposite commercials, which is, if you go with the fly-by-night Reuter company, you have to pay them. Mm. And there'd always be a guy smoking a cigar, and he'd be blowing it in the face of the homeowner.
And you're peeling off 20s,
he's laughing.
He was going by weight, not by – there's no invoice here. It's just like, my bicep starts to give way, that'll mean you've paid enough for this Reuter service.
I'll let you know.
And the guy's laughing and blowing smoke, and the person just keeps peeling being – he's off. Like, keep them coming, boy.
Which you think that's enough? Oh, ho, ho.
It's no wonder those guys are out of business.
Indeed.
And Safelite, who does not accept money for their services.
That's a great business model.
Is going strong. Chris, can you find a Safelite? I think woman camping.
We got that one. Here we go.
With the guy. And you just look at the woman's face, man.
Customer has
She's broken
Safelite
up.
Story. This couple loves camping adventures. And their SUV is always there with them. So when their windshield got a chip.
Oh.
Another vacation ruined.
He's inquisitive, but she's devastated by this.
In-shop repair.
We they fix
the
it
before it could crack.
And with that looks their like Joey Fatone.
It was no cost to them.
Really?
Best yeah.
Service you can trust when you need it most.
I don't feel like the dude is playing a big enough role in this relationship.
I agree, and I think that the string of fairy light Edison bulbs is playing too much of a role in this relationship when they're camping.
And also the depiction of campers in general.
Yeah, the actual camper.
Anyone who's actually gone camping and had the guy next to him who wanted to bum the natty light and wanted to know if you're going to finish that doobie, that is not this couple.
No.
This is an Instagram couple put together.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good observation about women and cash, though. Gina, let's guess how much cash she has on her.
Oh, okay.
Well, okay.
We don't say anything. I will start out by saying Gina is very practical and probably has a little more than I would normally anticipate. So I'm going to say,
I'm not. I'm counting it.
I'm going to say $23.
I'm going under at 19. And I'm not judging because I keep a little cash in the car. It's kind of a valet parking thing, but I don't really have any on me.
The only cash Chrissy ever has is what I give her. Just like you need $20. Yeah, she never has any cash. I'm like, you need to have at least $20.
Oh, she gets her allowance?
Well, no, it's just someone overseeing anyway.
I thought I was going to have less. Well, I went away for the weekend and did a lot of tipping. But I have... $4 plus a 20 plus a crisp $100
bill.
I was almost dead on without the 100. God damn it.
Wow. Yeah, you would have been dead nuts on except for the $100 bill. Jesus Christ.
Wow.
It's a lot.
You never know.
A lot of wham.
That is a lot of good
money.
Wham, yeah.
All right. Last, there was Jim Carrey, and Jim Carrey was talking. It's an old thing, although it was trending a few days back. I think he was talking about becoming the Grinch. and undergoing like some sort of CIA training. I don't know what you got on that. Oh, did Max Pata just leave?
Sorry, he just hopped on a phone call.
Oh, okay. Well, now do we have that?
Catalytic converter's been stolen.
Have any of that Grinch stuff? No.
That's an inside
job. Well, there you go.
All right. Good story.
That was timely.
Yeah, I know.
Well, was it about
it's
his
my fault.
His 16 hours of getting into makeup?
It was that mixed with undergoing like CIA training to be able to do it.
To like shimmy down a chimney?
Well, yeah, don't forget the Grinch is a cat burglar.
Right.
No, like if you join the CIA, they might give you some training on being waterboarded. Mm-hmm. And not panicking or being tortured, sitting in a seat for 9 hours and having prosthetics cover your breathing holes and stuff.
That is, now I'm back. Now that's interested. Yes. Yeah, that's good.
Max Pata,
I'd love to hear
that. That would have been great.
Yeah, so yeah, it's loading right now. But he was on the Graham Norton show. Yeah, and he was just, he was with Jeff Daniels. I think they're plugging the Dumb and Dumber, the newest one.
There's a new one.
Or the newest one. This is an older story, but we just heard about
it.
He was talking about, because he has to go through all that grueling makeup and costume. And
not have a panic attack.
Yeah. I would be, again, I told you I couldn't be in the band Kiss or Gwar or any of this. I had makeup put on me a few days ago to do some hit on the TV show in a van. And I remember wrestling with I was done at like 6. Olga was like, damn, you look good. I was like, yeah, I got makeup on. She's like, you should wear makeup. Yeah, okay, all right. I'll get my tuxedo from the cleaners.
Part of your daily routine.
My top hat. Yep. I'll put my makeup on. And then the whole rest of the night, I was wrestling with myself like, do I take the makeup off? I'm taking it off before I go to bed, but I'm doing it in the shower because I just can't. But I just do it now. But no, I want to exercise. Oh, wait, am I going to get sweaty? Am I going to smear it on the towel? I couldn't imagine going full Grinch for 9 hours a day.
Full Grinch? What about a girl on any given day?
Any given day. What do you got? Sorry, Max Zapata.
Sorry, we're having some technical issues right now, but we're loading the video. I'll let you know.
I think you'd be annoyed, but you wouldn't panic. I would panic if I was in that chair, couldn't get out, and they're putting shit on my face. You don't really have those reactions.
It is. The only thing I can liken it to is when you do a race, they put the hood over your head, you put all the gloves and the fire suit and the helmets and everything, and then you get six-way harnessed into this like cage. And then you spend an inordinate amount of that time in the car not racing, just sort of sitting there on the grid and stuff. And you do have to cool your jets or you will kind of spaz out a little bit.
As it pertains to the makeup, is it the time or the restraint that would freak you out or that would be unpleasant?
It's always the time. The restraint, like I said, from the car, from the race cars, I understand the constraint part. So we'll listen to Jim. Sorry.
When I did the Grinch, I was literally the makeup was like being buried alive every day.
How long did it take?
The first day was 8.5 hours. And I went back to my trailer and put my leg through the wall. And I told Ron Howard I couldn't do the movie. And then Brian Grazer came in, and being the fix-it man, and came up with a brilliant idea, which was to hire a gentleman who is trained to teach CIA operatives how to endure torture. And so that's how I got through the Grinch.
Good gig.
It was quite hilarious. He said, eat everything you see. And if you're freaking out and you start to spiral downward, turn the television on, change a pattern, have someone you know come up and smack you in the head, punch yourself in the leg. So or smoke as much as you possibly can. So I was this Grinch sitting. And this giant cigarette holder, so the yak hair wouldn't go on fire.
Wow.
Ghislaine Maxwell making an early appearance on the Graham Norton show, or at least a woman that looked pretty much like.
Oh, that was her.
Yeah.
That looks
she
like
is,
her.
She the trial has started, by the way.
I know.
There's not really nothing to report yet.
No TV or anything allowed.
I don't have any clips.
Say this. I've seen a couple of trials. Maybe it was this Maxwell one. I don't remember. Ghislaine. I don't know how to say her name, but. They do the sketch artist thing. at certain points, the sketch artist includes photographs that are being displayed at the trial.
Like Exhibit A.
I would argue we could see photographs that were being displayed. He then draws a picture of the photograph that they're displaying.
Yeah.
I say we grandfather those ones in. All right, let me tell you about Tommy John, wishing you a merry softness and a happy new rear. That's right. Super comfortable underwear, loungewear, and pajamas. It's getting a little cool outside, and the Tommy John loungewear is just so scrumdilicious, man. Over 17 million pairs sold of the underwear. I will not leave the house without them. If you're exercising, rowing machine, treadmill, cycling, jogging, whatever, you need your Tommy Johns, man. Give the gift of Tommy John this holiday season. It's become a tradition for a lot of families. They don't have customers. They have fanatics. Like, they're smart. They give them to everyone, and then everyone who they sponsor wears them, and then they speak from the heart, or in my case, the loins. They have the returns and exchanges are free, all backed by the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free. Guarantee, right, Dawson?
Get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. Order now so your gifts arrive before the holidays. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
All right. We have a very covert ops segment next. We'll speak to the founder of the Brotherhood of Vigilance, and we'll do that right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com. Good news. Two more comedy specials taping at the Brea Improv December 15th. TJ Miller's going to join us for one of those, and Patrick Warburton is going to be on for another one. So two shows, December 15th, Brea Improv. Come on out and be part of the filming. Tickets at adamcarolla.com.
It's Christmas time, the season when we get real drunk. At Christmas time, we get fucked up and then upchuck. And at our office parties, nail interns in the copy room throw up in potted plants at Christmas time. Drink a drink for the Africans. At Christmas time, you get shit-faced. Meanwhile, they have none. There's a world across the ocean, a world without wine or beer, where the only buzz they have is the flies around their ears. And the only happy ones there are at Oprah's School for Girls. Well, tonight get smashed and thank God as you hurl. Cause there won't be booze in Africa this Christmas time. Just diseases, famine, civil war and strife.
Colin Casey, founder of the Brotherhood of Vigilance, and I guess we got onto you because you did a podcast, American Vigilante. It was a BBC podcast, so I'm very interested in what you do. I know you've disguised your appearance, but walk us through how it began. What was the origins of this?
Well, Adam, I'd gotten out of the military and I was trying to kind of find my path in life. And I was one of those people that, you know, I really didn't. I wasn't going to carry a gun again. I was just going to kind of live my life and be peaceful. And I was attacked. I was attacked by three guys walking down the street. I actually was working for a corporation and I was handling large amounts of money and I was going to go do a deposit. And we ended up having a serious altercation. I did take them all out. There was actually two police officers that were riding by on bicycles that saw the whole thing. And they just happened to sometimes go by where I worked. And so they knew who I was. And I went home that night.
Well, hold on. Let's just backtrack for 1 second. You said you took them all out?
Yeah.
How does that, what do you mean by that?
Well, there was three of them. One guy was leaning against the wall. Two guys were standing out on the sidewalk. And whenever I was walking up, one of them asked me if I had a light. And I told him no. And after I told him no, I went to walk. And the guy that was standing in front of me kind of put his hand out on my chest. And he goes, well, we need your money. And the guy that was over leaning against the wall stepped out with a knife. There wasn't a whole lot of time to think about it. So I hit one guy in the face with the money bag and stomped the other guy's knee. And I ended up messing him up pretty bad. The guy that had the knife, I took the knife out of his hand. I had it up against his throat whenever the police officers came there. They all ended up going to the hospital. Broken knees, separated clavicles, multiple contusions and abrasions. And I realized that if they were going to attack somebody like me, that they'd attack somebody like my mom or my sister or your grandma or your daughter. And I kind of made a decision that if I wasn't going to be part of the problem, I could be part of the solution. And that's how it all started.
With his training, you should have realized that he was a lethal weapon.
Oh, yeah. Thinking of Con Air.
Con Air, that's right.
So this inspired this notion. But what is the bulk of your work? Like, how does it apply? What's the application in the real world? What are some of the cases you've worked on?
My God, Adam, it's such a broad spectrum. The big thing that we really like to be noted for is our recovering of kidnapped children. We've provided closure to many, many families whenever the police have either been out of options or not had the opportunities that we have to be able to develop information. So we can aggressively pursue leads that law enforcement doesn't have the ability to do so.
Gina.
So in terms of your relationship or maybe lack thereof with law enforcement, do they butt up against you? Do they turn their head? Do they try and be a resource?
Well, Gina, we don't contact law enforcement whenever we go to work. Mm. First of all, broadsword and blanket, what we do is illegal. When you're developing leads, sometimes you have to color outside of the lines of the law. And whenever a child, I don't know if you've got kids or not, but a kid's kidnapped, taken away, you know, you've got a maximum of 96 hours. 4-year-old probably never see that kid again. And usually within 48 hours, they're already dead or they've already been raped, molested, whatever you want to say. So when we get contacted, we pursue leads aggressively in every way that we can. So law enforcement, you know, they're human beings, right? They love us and they hate us. The ones that I've been in contact with, I've had some cops that I've had to be involved with in certain levels that love us and what we do, but they can't sanction it. And they'd have to arrest me the minute that they knew that I was doing something wrong.
How much of this goes on in this country versus abroad?
What do you mean this? You mean our work?
Yeah, your work. Like, let's say someone's been kidnapped. Is it heading into Mexico, heading into Haiti? Like, is it heading somewhere, well, or is there a lot of it domestically?
Well, I've never worked in Haiti. A lot of it domestically. I have worked outside of the country before. I've taken as many as two guys with me out of country on other jobs. We've never needed any more than three of us on any of those deals. The most men I've ever taken on one case was six. My team's pretty versatile, and they're very good at what they do.
Do you get compensated for it?
Well, there's compensation financially, and then there's compensation morally, right? So compensation financially, probably what you're asking is probably less than 40% of the time we get financial compensation. Wow. I can tell you this, that we've done a lot more pro bono work than we've done paid work in the more than two decades that we've been doing this. And then a lot of times, even if we go into a place and there's exorbitant amounts of cash or something, we will even, instead of lining our pockets, which probably we're stupid for not doing, we will donate it to some person or place that's worthy, whether it's a widow of a military person that has kids, or whether it's somebody that's been hurt or injured in the past that needed some extra help, whether it be medical or mental or whatever. So we provide a charity service too.
Can you walk us through a specific case that may give us a better idea of how exactly all this works?
Well, yeah, I can. Do you want a vendetta case, or do you want a child recovery case, or do you want, what do you want, Adam?
I'm going vendetta.
We say vendetta.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you listened to my podcast at all?
No.
Say yes.
I mean, yes.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Believe me. All right. So one of the episodes is labeled, you know, Amanda, and her husband had went, they'd known each other for, God, forever. They finally got married. They knew each other from high school. Amanda had went off into college. And then she came back, and he's just a blue-collar worker. And they end up getting married. And this kid, well, I can't say kid, this man, he had worked his butt off, and I mean hard, from the time he was probably 15 years old. And all he wanted to do was buy Amanda a really nice house and take her on a really nice honeymoon. And they were going to go down into Mexico. And on the second day there, she was kidnapped. And she was kidnapped because they were out. They weren't out partying. They were out being a couple in love. They weren't even hardly drinking. But she had been noticed a lot by the locals. She was just a beautiful girl that just attracts attention. And so some people came to their room pretending they were security. They ended up beating the hell out of him, taking her.
Come on, bro. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Oh, good. Brian is playing Amanda by Boston. Sorry, go ahead. Right when she's getting beaten and killed, Brian. Come on.
That's all right.
He's describing her beauty.
Have some couth. Sorry, go ahead.
When her husband shows up and gives you an ass whooping for it, it's not on me because I had nothing to do with it.
So she, I'm sorry. So she gets abducted and raped and killed or beaten?
No. She was just, but she was abducted and she'd shot up with heroin and she was being sold. She was being rented out daily. I can tell you this after I recovered Amanda, this is something that's not in the podcast. When I got Amanda back, she had a sexually transmitted disease and 12 different semen samples inside of her.
Well, don't.
So,
wow. But don't skip past the part where you were contacted or how you found out about this.
Right.
So they're going to Mexico. They're a young couple. They're in love. They're going to, he's a hardworking guy. They're going to celebrate.
They're strolling around.
Right. Cartel guys, I'm guessing, get hold of her and basically turn her into a sex slave.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And
so her father
you get
is
contacted,
a very wealthy man.
Uh-huh.
And he was so angry. I mean, his first instincts were to contact the FBI and everything else. And he had friends telling him that's going to take too long. So he started going through channels and contacting people. And finally, somebody gave him my name and my number. So I contacted him and we talked. He flew to me and then he flew me straight down there. Forrest and I had just finished up another case.
What day is this in terms of her abduction? Like when you fly out there, how long has she been?
She'd only been abducted for, I think, 48 hours whenever we first got the call.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So anyway, I got down there and started looking to develop leads, and I found a very, very fine thread after days of being down there, and I was able to develop a lead, locate Amanda, and anyway, I got her out of there. She was actually with another girl that had just been picked up.
Where was she? Is this, what's a Liam Neeson movie?
Taken.
Is this kind of that real life version of what we're talking about?
I would say it's very much like that.
And so her.
The only difference is that we've been doing this more than 20 years, and Liam made that like 4 years ago.
So she's, where's the husband at this point?
He's in the hospital in the U.S.
Where he was attacked or when she was abducted?
He was beaten so badly, his skull was fractured. He had teeth knocked out. He was beaten severely. He had broken ribs and internal injuries. Her father flew him back up to the U.S.
And it was clear the Mexican authorities weren't going to do anything in this case?
I wasn't privy to that information, but I do know how Mexican authorities work, and I can honestly tell you that a blonde-haired woman with her man in Mexico, and she disappears, it's just another one of those things. It's an American that got drunk and was partying. So, yeah.
So they don't pay a lot of attention to it. You get a lead to where this safe house is or wherever she's being kept, right?
Right.
How do you develop that lead? How does that work?
Jesse, he had remembered something about the guys, and in the podcast, I don't even disclose all the information because
Jesse's the husband.
Yeah. The one thing about my work is that a lot of the people whose lives I affect negatively only see what you're seeing right now. So, they don't know who I am. They don't know what happened. They just know that some guy came in there and this shit happened and, what the hell, right? So I can't give you all the identifying features. In fact, in the podcast, I even misrepresented the feature that was the identifying thing that Jesse gave me. Mm-hmm. But for lack of a better thing, it was a tattoo. And I was able to finally locate the guy. All I did was I went back to the restaurants that they'd went to, and I went back to the dance club they'd been to, and I just sat there and waited and waited and waited, because the only lead I had was, a brown guy with dark hair and this certain tattoo, and that's all I had, right? That was it. So I just had to sit there and wait and wait, and finally it was a Saturday night, and he came walking in with his friends, and they were actually drugging another girl. That's why I caught him doing that, followed him back to their apartment. And then, I don't know if it was an apartment. What do you want to call it? I don't know. Whatever the hell they call them down there. And I went inside after doing a little bit of surveillance, because I never saw her. I never saw Amanda. I saw the other girl. But all the scenario was the same. The guy's ID fit. And so when I went in there, I ended up finding Amanda in the back room. And it's sad because one of the guys that was there right after they got back with the other girl went in to check on her. And in checking on her, he was gone about 25 minutes. So I'm sure you could put together what happened there while I was sitting outside trying to find out if she was in there or not.
Do you go in with your partner?
No, I went in. Well, let me see. Yeah, because Forrest was with me on that.
And what are you armed with?
I had a 10-millimeter handgun, and I had a knife, and I had an asp. That was all I had with me.
What was the third one?
Asp.
Oh, an asp.
I don't know what that is.
Like a
it's
snake?
A retractable baton.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, it's one of those foldable.
Yeah.
Telescopic.
Yeah.
Yeah, telescopic. All right. And did you go in there guns blazing, or what was their reaction when you went in?
Well, one guy left. He had left the room, so I knew there was only two in there. And one guy was back. So when I went in, there was only the guy that was right there with the girl that was on the couch they'd brought in. And so when I came in, I just took him out, and the other guy came out, and I took him out, and that's when I found Amanda. And then the third guy came back, and I had to shoot him. So
what?
I ended up carrying both the girls out of there and getting them down to the car that the guy had actually left in and came back in and took them to the hospital. And then from there, notified her father, and he ended up arranging private medical care for him and getting them back to the U.S.
Oh, what did Amanda think when you walked in? I mean, obviously she didn't recognize
you. She was so shot up full of heroin, and she was in such bad shape. I mean, if I could describe the smell to you in that room, you'd throw up right now.
And how many? When you went to the discotheque or whatever, the dance club, you waited and waited and waited. How many days from when you got down there to when you recovered her, you think?
It was the second day, third. I think it was the fifth or sixth day when I recovered her, if I remember right. No, it wasn't. It was longer than that.
Around a week-ish.
Yeah, a little bit more probably, because it was 2 days when I got notified, and then it took me about 3 to 4 days, I think, to find them.
Do they know who you are? Do you have contact with them, the victims, the husband, Amanda?
Yes, Amanda now has 5 children.
Wow.
Whoa.
And she's a very happy, proud mother. And, you know, I even heard somebody call her a rape victim one time, and she started tearing them up. She's like, I'm not a rape victim. She says, I'm a mom. She goes, that's just something that happened in my life. That doesn't define me. Wow. So she's a pretty incredible woman.
How rare is it to find these subjects alive? I mean, I imagine that's got to be rare.
Well, I think Amanda was bought as a resource, you know. I think that somebody probably kidnapped her and then sold her to these other people. But what ended up happening with that was when I came back to the U.S., Amanda's father was still very angry because he realized that the guys that did this weren't the guys that were pulling the strings.
The kidnapper, right. Yeah.
So he was pretty pissed, and he started using his money and digging, and he developed some more information that found out that there was somebody bigger. So he ended up contacting me again and requested that I go down and give him peace.
Damn.
Did you do that?
Yes, sir, I did.
It's the Dark Knight, man. He's the superhero.
How do you, I mean, obviously before you give someone peace or just a piece of your gun, you really want to confirm that, right? I mean, you want to check and double check, make sure you got the right hombres, right?
That guy's going to be like, you got the wrong guy, you got the wrong guy.
Yep. Right.
You're very right. You're very right.
So that's got to be kind of a pretty good vetting process. How does that work?
Well, like I told you, Amanda's father was wealthy and pissed off, so he did a lot of the groundwork before he even contacted me. He still didn't know exactly who the man was, but he knew where the house was, and he understood what he did. So he had spent a lot of time and a lot of resources developing that information. From there, I was able to figure out exactly who that person was, and then it still took me quite a while to be able to get close enough to him.
Do you, here's a more global question, you know, we're just off of this Kyle Rittenhouse trial. He was called a vigilante. A lot of people were saying, well, hey, if the cops aren't going to do anything and people are going to burn down people's businesses, then at some point people are going to take up arms and go there. I'm from LA. I remember we had the riots in 92, I guess, whatever, early 90s. I think it was 92. They're burning the place down. A Korean liquor store owners got up on the roof with a gun and said, no, we're not going to burn down my business. I know the cops are standing back, but somebody owns a business. So there's some law into the old, you know, into their own hands. And I wonder, with sort of the defund the police movement, cops stepping back, certainly Mexico seems like one big pile of that, but here, is there going to be more of this, more people doing what you do, more Kyle Rittenhouse types? Is this a trend? I mean, you would, you know, I'm from LA. I don't know any of these people, but yeah. is this something you feel like we're heading this direction?
You know, that is such a hard question, Adam. It really is.
That's what I'm here for.
Question is because people are as different as blades of grass. They really are. And what's happened is obviously, I mean, you see it, I see it, everybody sees it. People are just getting to the point, for a lack of a better thing, is they're just pissed off. They're really getting angry. I mean, and when people are scared, they get mad. They do. Look at those two people in, I don't even remember what state it was. They're an older couple, and somebody was like coming into their house and they picked up their guns, and I think they got put in jail for it. I don't remember anything about it. It was an older couple in, like, I don't remember if it was in Missouri or Arkansas or something, but it's just people, it's out of fear. It's like, you know, I train dogs. Dogs bite more out of fear than for any other reason. People are the same way. When they get scared, I mean, I know this. I've got friends that live in LA. They live by you. I've got friends that live all over California.
So watch out.
And they're calling me, asking me to teach them how to use firearms and what they should buy, because they've never owned a gun in their life. They're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and they're wanting me to come down and give them tactical training because they're terrified. And these are people that have never had guns in their life.
No, Sarantos. You hear that story? You guys hear that story?
That is.
Well, the guy runs Netflix.
Okay.
His wife is a black woman who was the daughter of a famous producer.
Producer. Ariel Maynor.
Yeah, I would have to figure it out. Jackie anyway, there's a couple. It's Ted Sarantos' in-laws, essentially.
Right.
Live in whatever states in Bel Air, Beverly Hills, whatever. And a couple guys just rolled up into their house, a robbery, shot and killed the...
Jesus.
That's in the middle of Beverly Hills. Yeah. I mean, that stuff never went on. I was talking to a woman who showed me footage of her friend who lived in Hancock Park, was pushing her kid up the driveway, sun shining, middle of the day. A couple guys come running in, with the gate was closing. I mean, gated houses, Hancock Park, Beverly Hills. Shit's getting a little dicey out there, and people, just like that couple, look, when someone busts down the gate and the mob's coming down the street, they're going out front. I mean, they're going to get their AR and head out there. It cannot go any other way.
And that's got nothing to do with them being vigilantes. All they're doing is protecting their property.
Yes.
You know, they're not going out and creating havoc and trying to do something redeemable. They're just trying to protect what's theirs, and that's what I mean. And they're doing it out of fear. They're terrified.
Yeah.
And I was floored at how many people were contacting me. Go ahead.
Well, you were talking, Adam, a little bit macro, and I have sort of a micro question for you. How you said you have friends everywhere. You know, it's like you have to be able to live your life a little bit, I would imagine. Do you feel like you have this double life, and how hard is that for you to sort of negotiate?
Well, I have lived a double life. You really hit the nail on the head there. You know, I was married for a very long time, and you know, my wife knew that I would go and recover kidnapped children, but she didn't realize what I did.
Right.
You know
what it took to get them.
Believe me, she had no clue. I'd be gone, you know, and I'd come back with money and pay the bills, and I'd get called out on this, and I'd come back, pay the bills, and she's a good wife and mom. She took care of the kids, kept the house clean, never had a problem, you know. So when all this started coming to head, I kind of had to tell her, you know, and we're not married anymore. But, you know, my kids are old enough now, and they didn't know. You know, my kids grew up knowing that every time my pager went off, I was going to pick up my gun and put it on and leave. And you want to know something that tears your heart out. You know, it's your own kids coming up to you saying, you know, Papa, be careful. Mm. It's a hard thing because they realize, you know, and my son at 3.5 years old tells me, Papa, my pager went off. And all he said was, Papa, don't let the bad guys get you. You know, that really hits you.
Yeah.
But the double life. Yeah. I mean, I have a business and I have things that I do normally, but everything I have is so that I can walk away if I get called out. And everybody on the team is the same way. And we all have adaptable lives.
Well, sorry, I just wanted to know, besides the people you work with, is there anyone in your inner circle who knows everything?
Only the team knows everything.
Yeah.
And here, this will make you blow your mind. Everybody on the team doesn't know each other.
Oh, like independent contractors kind of.
Wow.
The rules of the team are, is that if you aren't going to go on the job, you don't get to know about the job. So it's an operational security thing. It's spokes in a wheel. Whatever area of the U.S. we're going to work in at that time, I'll contact team members closest to that area first. And if they are available and want to do it, then that's the way it goes.
Reservoir
but
dogs.
Even, yeah. even if we get together, you know, can't talk about anything. Somebody hasn't been on a job with you.
Right.
So even a lot of the team members right now that started hearing these stories, and this was sanctioned by the team. They voted that I could do this. You know, they're like, oh, crap, that was that job. You know, why do you even tell me about that? So, yeah, there's a lot of ribbon going on right now.
We need a bat signal for this guy.
Well, Casey, I hope you can come back on and share more of these fascinating, harrowing stories with us. The podcast is American Vigilante. And I'll throw out your website and your Twitter, but it's not on the page. No. Casey, this has been really revealing, and I thank you for joining us.
Yeah, hey, I got one thing I'd just like to say. Mm-hmm. Forrest was on a different Mexican job with me, not this one. I was solo on this one. So,
understood.
Anyway, you guys have a good day.
Thank you for the correction.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, there you go. Now, look, you know, it's like that couple in St. Louis. The news tore that couple apart.
They became a punchline.
And they're like, we want these guys arrested in the full extent of the law. It's like, what the fuck are you supposed to do when the mob is coming down the fucking street and the cops aren't coming? What would you like them to do, news outlets? I don't get, I mean, to me, it's not really the mob and it's not really them. It's the processing of it. Like people going, I don't know, do something else. It's like, their group broke down a fence. They're heading up the street, and the cops ain't coming. What shall we do? And they didn't shoot anybody. They're just like fucking one out there. It was like, you're not coming in. And I don't know if they wanted to come in, but they didn't come in.
Right.
We had one out here with, I think we had a DA whose husband went out when the mob showed up on the lawn.
Lacey.
Jackie Lacey's husband like went out and just went, you're not coming in here. He didn't pistol whip anyone. Right. He didn't fire the gun. There. He just went, you're not going. I don't know if you're planning on coming into my house and setting it on fire or not. We don't know. That's kind of the problem. There have been many examples of you guys doing this.
We'd like to encourage you to rethink
that. We're encouraging you not to do whatever it is you potentially could do. And if the cops are going to stand back, then you're going to get more of this. And then somehow we live in this world where it's like, well, the cops are going to stand back. We got more angry mobs. But we're somehow, all our anger and ire is focused at the people who are standing there with the gun. We have to prosecute them. It's like, no, you don't. You need a society where marauding hordes of fucking hooligans don't run around and threaten people and set things on fire. All right. Well, if that wasn't depressing enough, I'll give you some help. BetterHelp. Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. We talk about BetterHelp a lot on this show, and this month we're discussing some of the stigmas around mental health. Dr. Drew loves BetterHelp because he said you avoid the waiting room, which a lot of people are kind of freaked out by, heading in, sharing that space with the chiropractor, and you have to sit there and make eye contact with those people. We take care of our bodies. You go to the gym, you go to the doctor, you're into nutrition. How about you focus a little on your minds, people? BetterHelp. Customized online therapy offering video, phone and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. More affordable than in-person therapy. Get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It's BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. And Adam Carolla Show listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Carolla. That's BetterHelp.com/Carolla.
All right. We'll all read the menu from Blandino's with Dave Damashek right after this.